talk to.
Let 'em talk with Paul DiRienzo, keeping an eye on the New World Order. 1:30 Wednesday night, Thursday morning, following Robert Knight. Let 'em talk on WBAI 99.5 FM.
Facet of national life. There's a war being waged on parents' kids. In social policy, poor mothers are targeted for criminal sanctions for acts, if committed by mothers of higher economic class, would merit treatment at the Betty Ford Center. In youth policy, governments hasten to close schools while building boot camps and prisons as their graduate schools. Xenophobic politicians hoist campaigns through the dark star of imprisonment for street beggars. Further fattening the fortress economy, the only apparent solution to the scourge of homelessness is to build more and more prisons. In America's 90s, to be poor is not so much socioeconomic status as it is a serious character flaw, a defect of the spirit. Federal statistics tell a tale of loss and want so dreadful that Dickens, of A Tale of Two Cities fame, would cringe. Consider 7 million people homeless with less than $200 in monthly income. 37 million people, 14.5% of the nation's population, living below poverty levels. Of that number, 29% are African Americans, meaning over 10.6 million blacks living in poverty. Both wings of the ruling Republican Party try to outdo themselves in announcing new, ever more draconian measures to restrict, redress, restrain, and to eliminate the poor. One is reminded of the wry observation of French writer Anatole France: the law, in its majestic equality, forbids the rich as well as the poor to sleep under bridges, to beg in the streets, and to steal bread. Already, U.S. manufacturers have fled to NAFTA-friendly Mexico, and only the Zapatista insurgency in Chiapas has slowed an emerging flood of Western capital. Outgunned in the industrial wars by Japan and Germany, the U.S. has embarked on a low-technology, low-skilled, high-employment scheme that exploits the poor, the stupid, and the slow via a boom in prison construction, America's sole growth industry. Increasingly, more and more Americans are guarding more and more American prisoners for more and more years, and this amidst the lowest crime rate in decades. No major political party has an answer to this social dilemma, short of cages and graves for the poor. The time is ripe for a new, brighter, life-affirming vision that liberates, not represses, the poor, who, after all, are the vast majority of this earth's people. Neither serpentine politics nor a sterile economic theory, which treats them, people, as mere economic units, offer much hope, for the very politicians they vote for spit in their faces, while economists write them off as non-persons. It must come from the poor, a rebellion of the spirit that reaffirms their intrinsic human worth based upon who they are rather than what they possess. From Death Row, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
And welcome to Let 'Em Talk. I'm Paul DiRienzo with Miss Jo Marie Moosey. Hi, Johnny.
Hello. Hi, everybody.
We are back. We have an exciting show tonight. This is a show to get out the tapes and to shove them in there and to make a copy, because this is a classic Let 'Em Talk. And we have a fascinating lineup of guests. We have a full house. Almost every seat is taken. And happy to see everybody here on Let 'Em Talk.
And cameras.
Right.
I just wish I had dressed up more.
All right. Let me make sure everybody's got a mic. And... Well, joining us is, I'll go from right to left, Al Giordano, the Mexican correspondent for the Boston Phoenix.
Thank you, Paul.
Back from at least, what, a year now, year and a half, 2 years in Mexico?
The better part of 2.5 years.
Two and a half years. Boy, it's getting to be a long time.
And when were you last on the show, Al? I'm trying to remember
1997.
That. Right before you left?
Yeah.
All right.
So he's back. The prodigal son returns to Let Him Talk. Back from Chiapas in southern Mexico, where he has been hanging out with the Zapatistas and has a lot of stories to tell. We have, though, our special guest of honor is Mario Menendez, editor of Por Esto, which is the third largest daily in Mexico, in the nation of Mexico. It's based in Yucatan, Mexico.
Correct.
And he has an interesting history, and he's going to be talking about the war on drugs and how that affects Mexico and the United States. So this is really, if you have any friends in the DEA, you better call them up right now to tune in.
Oh, they're listening.
They're listening already. And also our third guest we'd like to welcome here is Kiovanna. Hi, Kiovanna.
Hello.
Hi, and she's the founder of the Columbia Law Students for a Humane Drug Policy, and is here representing the Latin American Law Student Society of Columbia University. And one of the reasons we're here is to talk about the conference, which is occurring on March 3rd and 4th at Columbia University Law School.
That's this weekend.
Latinos in the United States, the Evolving Relationship with Latin America. And in particular, the panel that's going to happen on the 4th, on March 4th, from 3 to 5 p.m. or from 4 to 5
3
p.m.?
3 to 5 p.m.
3 to 5 p.m. It's the drug war panel, and it's going to have our guest, Mario Menendez of Por Esto, and he'll be together with Al Giordano on the same panel as guess who?
No.
No?
No. Howard Zaffir is doing the dinner.
Oh, yeah, because his name is there.
Right. These were printed 2 months ago.
Oh, really? So
lineups changed.
However, we will have Ethan Nadelman of the Linsmith Center, who is the number one person for drug policy reform in the United States.
And right. Howard Zaffir is still appearing.
Howard Zafir speaking in the opening dinner, which is at 7 p.m. at the law school, and that's on Amsterdam and 116th Street.
Now, I thought we'd have Howard Zafir and Al Giordano together on the same
I was going to bring my wallet.
We thought it might be too
former
steamy.
DEA agent Howard Zafir, by
yeah,
the way.
Yeah, just get that wallet out and hold it up.
Now, you know, I asked Howard Zafir right after the revelations came out the Dark Alliance revelations that the U.S. was somehow involved in the importation of cocaine through the Contras into California. And I asked him if he was a DEA agent in that same period and had seen any of this, and he denied it, said, no, this is not true. No agent I knew was involved in any of this material. But then again, he told us that his police officers were not brutal killers who were stomping through the streets of the Bronx shooting unarmed men down, and we wound up to be having another situation happen again tonight.
Right. Only 1.5 blocks from Wheeler Avenue.
Only 1.5 blocks. And what's fascinating about this story is you have to understand the man who was shot down and killed tonight in the Bronx, a block and a half, had also been arrested. He had a crime. He had a criminal record. And you know what his criminal record was, his last arrest? He was arrested and charged with disorderly conduct, and resisting arrest, And guess where he was charged with disorderly conduct and resisting arrest? At Friday night's Diallo protest. So
that's
now
right.
We have NYPD hunting down and shooting to death participants in the Diallo protests.
23 years old.
Coincidence? Is it a coincidence? Joni, you're shaking your head left and right, not up and down.
I don't know about coincidence, but 23 years old is a very young man to be shot to death in the street.
That is true. Our number, by the way, is 212-209-2900. And, of course, we'll be opening up the phones. But first, let's talk about the issue at hand. And
a little bit of biographical background on Mr. Menendez. I think everybody would like to know.
Mr. Menendez, why don't you – could you tell us a little bit about yourself and about Por Esto and how you came to be editor of Por Esto?
Well, this is a long story. It started on my own city where I was born in Mérida, Yucatán, Mexico. I was a member of a family, or I come from a family that has been journalists all the life, for 3 generations. And I graduated at Tulane University, and then I received a scholarship from Columbia University to do postgrad, PhD. On journalism. However, it was a very bad thing that ashamed the whole family of us in Yucatan, because I never knew that scholarship was given to me because a brother of my father, an uncle of mine, who was the father of all of the today's paper, Yucatan's paper, Diario de Yucatan, he wanted the scholarship for his son. His son had not graduated in university. He just had a high school degree and had graduated at the university, and I also had master's, and I had all the credits for PhD. But I never knew that I received the honor of Columbia University. And one afternoon, the consul of the United States, Dwyer, I believe was his last name, erupted in the newspaper, my family's newspaper, and he started saying many words, bad words against me because I did not accept the scholarship. And I said, what are you talking about? I don't know anything. What do you mean you don't know? They're waiting for you at Columbia University, the best university in this field, and you're refusing a scholarship. No, I don't know about it. By that time, my father was hearing the dialogue, strong dialogue between the consul and myself, and he went to speak with his brother and ask him what was happening. And my uncle said, well, my son is older than yours. He's 7 years older than I am. He is the first man in the family, first grandson. Yours is the second one. So he deserves to be to receive the scholarship. Mexico. The Council of the United States heard that, and he erupted in that discussion, and he told my uncle, you have to be out of your mind. This scholarship was given to your nephew, and he's given to your nephew because of his studies. Your son never went further of high school. And well, that was a very sad discussion, and I never could come to Columbia University. Now I'm coming back 42 years later, so that's an honor.
To speak there.
But that marked myself at the family's newspaper. I said there was no place for me there because too many nephews, too many grandsons, and there was going to be a big fight. I started a big crusade to defend working people, the hemp, the fibers production. It was a big campaign, and in 1965 I decided to leave Yucatan because it was no place for me. I went to Mexico City, and that same week I was named director of a weekly magazine, which became the most important in the decade of the 60s, called Sucesos. At that time I was 25 years old. In Sucesos, I started a new type of journalism that was not known or was not put in practice for many years in Mexico. That means go to the places, search for the news, try to find the truth where it is, and then invite other people to come with you to help and get a better vision of that truth. In other words, it's not a selfish point of view, it's not a particular point of view on truth. My thesis is that as many people can join this fight crusade as well, that means we can get the more approach to truth, because there are many people working for that. So I got international journalist prizes, awards. Curious, I was never recognized in Mexico. Curious, too, it was all silence because it was a very tough decade, the 1960s. I remember those times, the AP, the Associated Press, United Press International, France Press, Reuters, their journalists were not the ones that were writing the big reportages on the guerrillas, the guerrilla movement in Latin America. It was a Mexican that was doing those reportages, and a Yucatecan was doing those things. And I was shaking up the whole Latin America those times. That was the year when Fidel Castro gave the first exclusive interview to a Latin American journalist. He gave it to me. I was 26 years old. Well, but that type of journalism was not liked by the American embassy. So I could not come back to the United States for 31 years. I was banned. I was invited to go and give dissertations, talks. Like today, I was invited by Columbia University. I was invited in Berkeley, and they would not give me the visa. I was invited in Chicago. I would not be given a visa. Puerto Rico will not be given a visa. So all these reportages on the movement, our movement in Latin America, gave a new vision of journalism, but it also took off the mask of what was happening with journalists in Mexico. When you see that you write, you can write big reportages full of pictures. You can tell the truth of the suffering of many people. Yet, in Mexico, if the president says there is no a line that can be published on this matter. And nobody will write. And it's silence. I will invite you all to search in Mexican institutes of investigation on journalist stories if you can find the period. I was the editor, I was the director, editor and reportero, reporter on the problems of Latin America in the 1960s. You will not find it. Hmm. I did not exist. My work was not known in Mexico. You were banned by the government. And one day was a very sad thing. I was interviewing Fidel one of those times. He told me that the owner of the magazine, Sucesos, where I was the editor, the director, told me that this owner blackmailed him, asked him in 1967 for $500,000 or otherwise I would be thrown out of the directing the magazine. I was no longer. Fidel told me, and my answer was real quick, I renounce today. Going back to Mexico, I'm renouncing. So I presented my resignation with a pair of slapping I gave the owner of the magazine.
You were in Cuba?
No. I was in Mexico. When I interviewed Fidel, I was in Cuba. But when he told me that, I could no longer work at that magazine. Let me tell you, those were times.
They wanted a bribe from you of $500,000.
No. They asked Fidel $500,000. Or if he did not give that money, the owner of the magazine where I was the director will throw.